used to this environment.
Yes, so I understand.
Please be happy to give direction, I'm sure you will.
Well, you've handed up a copy of a map in your first submission, and presumably you have some things you'd like to tell us.
Okay.
And tell away.
I know, I will do my utmost. So actually, there's two separate submissions, so if I deal with the one that I've just got the map for, perhaps first. But maybe before we crack on, I'll just give you a little bit of background on me as a quick summary, so we know sort of where we're coming from. So my name's Peter Howe. I'm speaking as a member of the public. My background includes living in Queenstown for 14 years, working in senior management within local hotels, casinos, regional manager of hotels overseas, and 25 years experience in hospitality, including visitor accommodation. Historically, I grew up in a bed and breakfast and home share environment back in the UK. And I've been chair of, historically, I've been chair of Skull International Queenstown, which is the largest tourism and travel professional organisation in the world. I'm now chairperson of Alpine Meadows, Body Corporate, which is the matter, the map you have in front of you, and managing director of Distinctive NZ, which is a consultancy company based here in Queenstown, which provides independent advice on marketing and operations to holiday homeowners. I'm a homeowner myself, a visitor accommodation operator and trustee. And I believe I'm well placed to make a positive contribution in the general discussion on visitor accommodation. Thanks for your time and for hearing me. And we'll crack on with the first submission, if we may, which is specifically in support of Kay with regards to the area of Fernhill generally and visitor accommodation. So if I can bring to the committee's attention, Alpine Meadows Complex on the map is number 135, right in the very centre, where the crease is, just to give a point of reference, it's just literally a couple hundred yards around the corner. If you'd like to look at later on for your interest, then I would invite you to do so to get greater context. Alpine Meadows Complex is not included in the visitor accommodation overlay of the proposed plan. We believe it should be. Historically, Fernhill has been a popular destination for visitor accommodation, as significant holiday homes present within it today. Historically, Alpine Meadows was visitor accommodation, being built for this purpose, and today the complex has a number of property owners operating either professionally or individually as visitor accommodation. I've included on the map, and you'll see, the outline for the area of Alpine Meadows, which is 26 units. Alpine Meadows historically was visitor accommodation as timeshare holiday homes as an extension to the development which is directly behind, which is unit 137 and 139, which is currently the hotel property today. So it's an extension to the hotel property that was then sold off and is now a separate sort of complex. As homeowners, we believe that we should be permitted to operate our properties in the way in which we see fit. From a body corporate perspective, we don't have any issues there, and the complex operates on a happy basis, for want of a better way to describe it. The complex as a whole is built on a geographical location, which has a steep incline to it. As I say, it backs onto a hotel, and its front area has very little impact on any neighbouring properties. On the map, if you were to look at the map and look at the Alpine Meadows Complex 135, you'll see to the west, south and southeast is all part of the overlay of visitor accommodation. So it's natural to see how historically at one point it was included, and I think due to a sale that went through, and we can't quite identify exactly the point in time, because the files don't seem to be complete from a council and planning perspective, at some point it slipped over to not having that, and we'd like to see it re-included within that overlay. Generally speaking, we think if this was included in the overlay, then ultimately all units would still be required to go through the robust planning with regards to any activity they take part in. The lay of the land has a very steep incline, as mentioned before, backing onto a hotel, a minimal disruption to the local area. The property is also surrounded by gullies and streams, and it faces towards the lake. Welcome any questions you might have on that matter.
So just within within the complex, so several of those units, or multiple of them anyway, are used as...
Between 30 and 50%.
In various forms of...
Various forms. Some people are using it as literally as a holiday home, and they use it for a shorter period of time. Some are, we could call it, fully fledged holiday homes, which are being used all time, managed by local sort of management companies. Some are being managed under the guise of individuals who live locally elsewhere themselves and manage and operate it on a daily basis. Historically, I've only taken up the role of chair since July, so we'll just clarify that in terms of my knowledge. So I'm trying to get up to speed. And sort of what's happened is, as part of the process of a property inquiring with regards to visitor accommodation through planning, we discovered that a lot of the old plans were lost. When Queenstown Planning was initially asked, there was initial thought that we had visitor accommodation as a site as a whole. It subsequently transpired as everything dug deeper, and this was earlier this year, as after this process had already started, we discovered that wasn't the case. And that's sort of why we'd like to see it reinstigated now. What we have is to say between 30 and 50% of the properties which have historically changed their use. They've gone from short-term accommodation sometimes to long-term rental, sometimes to owner-occupied, and owners have changed the use, if that's the way to describe it, as economic times have changed. And we'd like to see that people have the ability to choose that for themselves in the future, albeit go through a process to do so. From a Bonnycourt perspective, we don't have any problems with that. This is only 26 units, so where we at the minimum, we have 30% of units that physically take part in that way.
Thank you, and thank you very much for bringing the maps and photos. That's really helpful.
Thanks. Just for contextual questions, really. So the submitted Kay Parker, she lives in Alpine Meadows too, does she?
No, Kay Parker doesn't. We submitted this in support of her proposal, which is in reference to Fernhill as a whole.
Okay.
We wanted to identify what was impacting us,
yep,
which was the Alpine Meadows. So I'm trying to
her submission is specific to Alpine Meadows, as I understand it.
No, her submission is more general to Fernhill, but we are part of that.
Yep.
And so we feel we're directly impacted by it, because if the submissions, if the proposals went ahead as planned, that would have a detrimental impact on us.
Right. So if depending on the outcome of the hearing, if, for example, residential visitor accommodation wasn't allowed generally in residential zones, if you put VA over this area, you would still be able to go ahead and have residential visitor accommodation or visitor accommodation, rental or whatever. And that's really what you're seeking.
We'd like to continue what's been taking place for the last 15 years.
Yep.
But I guess what this whole process has thrown up is that at some point it's fallen off that overlay, and because it's either gone to independent body corporates, maybe with not the professional experience to dig in and understand the implications, so people have carried on really not knowing what's taken place.
Yep.
So we're trying to formalise and perhaps put back in place a more recognised system.
Thank you.
Yeah, morning, how are you? You mentioned at the start that you're a member of the public, and then you alluded you were the chair of Alpine Meadows since July. And mentioned the body corporate being keen to support. Are you speaking on behalf of the body corporate?
Yes, I'm speaking on behalf of what the owners generally would like to see, having the choice to operate their properties.
So you're speaking in your role as the chair?
As well as an individual. I own units within Alpine Meadows as well, so the submission you'll see is actually from me as a person as well, because I own two units there as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't hear any questions on that.
Really, with regards to the general VA side of things, I guess having given that background and experience, there was just some general comments I wanted to make with regards to the current proposed VA rules, specifically how properties are operated. So this is again my just personal view. The proposals as they stand simply seem to be adopting old models and trying to imply them into an industry which is today fundamentally changed. As we're all aware, industries as a whole and are moving into more of a sharing kind of environment. Travel, lifestyle have all changed, and if the plans don't incorporate this moving forwards, we're just simply saying this is how life has been for the last 30 years, and we're going to apply a set of rules based on the same 30 years of experience. Personally and professionally, I don't feel that's terribly appropriate. It's pretty much setting ourselves up to fail. So I just would like to make that comment. Secondly, it's very difficult as a professional person coming even from a hotel background to really understand where length of stay or how many days per year in the context of VA, where that information is coming from and what the logic is being employed to decide on the number of days being used. In the initial proposals, which have now been taken back a little bit in terms of those numbers of days for length of stay, it sort of appears that we've gone from one number to a different number based on public outcry or public outspeaking. However, even the number that's being talked about at the moment, which is sort of effectively 4 weeks, again, doesn't seem to have any economic or social measure to it. One imagines in the proposals, council would have put together a cost-benefit analysis and decided in terms of the overall number of houses and holiday homes that they wish to move from visitor accommodation to long-term accommodation, which apparently appears to be the aim. They presumably have calculated how many new homes this will create for the long-term rental market. It's my professional view that despite whatever that number is, it will have zero effect on rental income costs and likely zero effect on the actual number of rental properties available. Many people who own properties of differing values, lower value here in Queenstown at the moment might be considered right now $600,000, up to, as we know, very high figures. It's difficult to imagine how someone would necessarily want to be forced to use their property in a certain way. It's much more likely, as was the case when I first arrived in Queenstown 14 years ago, many of the holiday homes that were of the higher value just simply sat empty for half of the year. In fact, if we analyse figures today and look at holiday homes in Queenstown generally, we'll see that the occupancy rate right across the board, depending on the channel or online travel agent you view, is about 50%. Which indicates to me that either the demand is not there for them, or people are choosing not to actually have those properties used full time anyway. With regards to long-term accommodation, which is apparently the basis for the whole submission, with regards to VA, again, when I arrived 14 years ago, you typically had to wait 2 to 3 months in order to find any long-term rental accommodation. And you often lived in backpackers and bunked up with other people. That's still the same case today, and so little has actually changed. For me, this doesn't surprise me, in summary, simply because we live in a society where ultimately demand is dictated, and cost is dictated by demand and availability. So whilst we have properties valued where they are, people will look to get the return on investment they can on those properties, typically being between 4 and 6%. That will either be achieved by long-term rental or short-term rental, and therefore, regardless, we will end up with perhaps more properties than a long-term rental, but with extortionate high rents. So this won't solve the social problem, which apparently is the intent of the visitor accommodation changes. I would, however, like to just add that I do believe that all properties that are doing visitor accommodation should be registered. And I do believe we should have some firm guidelines and rules with regards to those. However, to finish, I believe those should be based on social needs and welfare, which is something that we can basically all get behind from a marketing perspective in the growth at Queenstown, i.e. should be linked to, does a property have fire extinguisher, first aid kit, smoke alarm, and is that being checked on a regular basis? I perceive that to be a very simple process, having very low regulatory costs. I don't believe measuring any property by the length of stay as a hotelier and someone with a lot of experience in the holiday home market is a very cost-effective means of trying to regulate, we'll call it an industry if I may. I question significantly how any council is going to actually regulate the number of days that a property is actually occupied without putting a person in a car outside the house and actually literally counting them. or requiring a neighbour to somehow adopt something, for want of a better word. So I really implore the committee to urge council, in whatever capacity it can, to look at a more flatline system, whether if someone simply advertises their property for short-term let, they have to be registered. It provides a nice, easy mechanism for monitoring. You've just got someone sat in an office, looking at an internet, seeing who's advertising, following it up with, is there a registration number which can be required to be on an advertisement? And that's easily achieved by all online travel agents, are very happy to do that. And a subsequent fine or can be imposed if someone doesn't show the correct information. Easy to regulate, low cost, raises money, and miraculously creates a database while giving a carrot for homeowners to actually register.
And just that's safe. From what you were saying about the registration, you see that along with registration, with the application of the minimum standards. Is that
correct?
That's correctly.
Yes. There is an argument being placed by industry as a whole, and as I mentioned, I've managed hotels in Queenstown. I'm mindful I'm not in that hat today, or generally. There's obviously a lot of competition and a lot of pressures in the next two or three years economically with regards to accommodation generally. There's a significant number of hotel rooms, literally 30% of hotel rooms going to come online in the next 3 or 4 years. That is as a hotel GM with a P&L, that's a pretty terrifying prospect. Probably not allowed to say it publicly, because probably I wouldn't be allowed to from a board level perspective. But there's a lot of competition and therefore perhaps pressure to look to reduce competition elsewhere, as opposed to, I would argue, restructure how hotels actually operate. And I personally have always held the belief that the hotel industry is operating the same way today as it's operated for the last 20 years, and it perhaps should look inwards to how it operates to be more effective and competitive in today's travel world, where customers want a different product and experience.
And just in terms of the minimum standards,
yes.
I didn't quite catch them, although I did catch fire alarm, fire extinguisher.
I think the absolute basics to me would be fire extinguisher, fire alarm, first aid kit. It seems like nonsensical to have anything less than that. Now we can argue on it, well, first aid kit, what is it, and you know, how do you monitor it, etc. However, self-registration, asking people, I know the council will argue that that's happened before and wasn't complied with. I don't believe in truth there was a lot of faith that it was either monitored, regulated, enforced, or there was any benefit to doing so. However, if people were registered and they were required to provide a registration number on their advertisement, I believe the likes of Destination Queenstown and other marketing corporate entities could get behind that, promoting Queenstown as a safe place to travel. Whereas in the media, it seems that authorities have tried to promote the idea of risk, i.e. I'll use the example of Christchurch fire property. Whether it's long-term rental or short-term, the principles actually apply. No one wants a disaster on their doorstep for many, many reasons. So I would say those would be the basic requirements. And I think on the back of that, it would also be easy to put in place requirements that require some kind of facility to know there's somebody on call to deal with the problem if needs be. I think it's totally reasonable to expect someone, even if it's not a named individual, to have a contact number that in the event of a problem, someone can be contacted.
No, I haven't any questions. Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
Yes, so perhaps the role of devil's advocate for a minute. I talked to you about the issues of rental accommodation and Airbnb. Also, even with my own example, I purchased a property in Queenstown in 2012. There was no Airbnb in those days. We needed some money because even then it was relatively expensive. So the house had been rented out until we moved in this year. The council's view of what they've extracted from them is basically what they want to do is, although they don't seem to openly say so, is create incentives to encourage long-term rental vis-a-vis Airbnb and similar arrangements. Now, there are changes in train at the moment for rental accommodation which are going to act as huge disincentives for rental landlords. The government's saying, well, you won't be able to claim expenses. They're saying you will not, if a tenant wants to stay there for 20 Given the situation in Queenstown is different to say Auckland, where only 1% is residential, do you think the council might have a point that in the Queenstown market you've got a situation where rentals simply can't compete with residential visitor accommodation as an option for people who are buying new homes in this area or who have already got rental houses and want to switch to Airbnb?
I would say from a bottom line financial perspective, like return on investment, I would perhaps add this. There's this argument from the hotel sector that independent holiday homes have lower operating costs. I don't believe they do, because the cost of things like cleaning, etc., often are significantly higher than the hotel sector. And the individual registration costs in terms of rates and the percentage increase on rates if you're registered as an holiday home are significant proportion to having one, two, or three bedrooms compared to a commercial operation. I'll perhaps try and use a very specific example. If you were to look at an average two-bedroom property in Queenstown today, the rent would be probably somewhere between $600 to $675. It would be a very average kind of rent. Let's say $600 if we want to edge on the side of being conservative. I think if you were to put a property up for a holiday, the same property with a holiday home management, professional company that's going to run it, market it, etc. Once you take out those costs from that management company, the net return is very, very similar. In fact, unless you're achieving an occupancy in excess of, I would say, 55, 60%, it will be more financially viable currently in today's world to be doing long-term rental anyway. Within Alpine Meadows as a complex, not right now, but literally if we were to turn the clock back about 12 months, two properties that were being operated as visitor accommodation with local management companies swapped over from holiday homes to long-term rental. But they've also been the reverse if we turn the clock back to the last economic cycle. So I personally feel people look to get the best. If you have an investment property, which is really what we're talking about, people will look to the best route with the lowest risk to gain their investment return. So some of the concerns, we all understand the concerns with regards to Airbnb, only because it's a significant global brand that's come into New Zealand in the last, we'll say, 3-4 years, significantly, and has taken the market by storm and made everyone stand up. I attended a meeting about a month and a half ago with, 2 months ago with Booking.com, which would be the largest global player in that market, and finally they are acknowledging within their discussions that Airbnb is a competitor to them. To me, they're just simply another online travel agent. It's just another method within which someone can. So I would urge, if there's urging of the council in terms of dialogue progression on this matter, I would be urging council to take a lead and use the correct language to promote and encourage dialogue, rather than perhaps beating a drum against a particular brand, for want of a better word. It's a little bit like saying, we don't like BMW, but you're okay if you do Audi. And to me, it's not the position of, especially when the people involved know the industry and know what they're doing. It's sort of a little bit like hotcakes. So reference the return on investment. I don't believe there is a lot of difference. If something is being run, let's say, full-time, in the capacity of visitor accommodation, I think if you were to look back to the growth of, let's say, Airbnb, if we want to discuss that as the phenomenon in this sharing economy, and let's not think that Airbnb is the only one that's going to come along, there'll be others, but that industry and other industries. I think we have to be really, really careful, because we're in danger of shooting ourselves in the foot. There was growth on Airbnb up till about January this year. Since January this year, it's remained pretty flat in terms of the number of actively listed properties online.
Is that in Queenstown or
nationally? Queenstown. Mm.
So you think basically you might be reaching a saturation?
I think we've already reached a saturation. Obviously, as the Queenstown grows, if Queenstown grows 10%, I would expect you would naturally expect to see a growth. I believe, and I can verify this in terms of my own properties that I do work for directly and for other people I speak with in the industry. In the last year of this particular year, we've already seen a return to 6, 7, 8 years ago, recessionary shoulder season occupancy and room rates. That to me is the very first indicator as an industry person that we actually have the capacity we need to fulfill visitor accommodation. So the concerns I would have coming from a VA holiday home perspective is I don't want restriction on that side, but certainly if you look on the hotel side with the imminent arrival of another 20-30% rooms, I've got significant concern there. So I deeply have concern as a conflict of interest from a commercial perspective to private individuals. And that's probably where the clash is really taking place. I'm concerned that the council isn't being used as a cash grab. And I sort of feel in all the communications, everything is about how can we raise money and how can we horizontally just build more, believing we can build out of what has been a growth of Queenstown. I've never seen a fire get smaller by putting more wood on it, if I'm honest. That's to try and use an analogy to try and, you know, illustrate where we are today. We have a fire, we throw more wood on it, and we're levelling the fire out. What do we expect to happen? My deep concern is economies are typically cyclical, and we're about to have infinitely more capacity online. That's going to bring room rates down. That's going to economically impact everybody, not just businesses, individuals. If we have any downturn in the economy as a whole, we're in for a really rocky ride. And it won't just affect industry in Queenstown, it will affect the entire population as a whole. And we can only all imagine how many people have bought very expensive houses, $1 million houses in semi-rural areas. And just to illustrate it, so hopefully I'm not going to say anything bad, but places like Lake Hayes and further out from Frankton, that are affording it today, but ultimately the second we have a downturn, won't. Because they won't get the room rates. We're already seeing, I track room rates right across the area, so I can give you specifics on what room rates are, and areas like that are already dragging down room rates within the central Queenstown area as a whole.
So I think the point you're making here is that a lot of what happens in the market is determined by things completely outside the control of the property owners and the council in this region. The government's rental changes could have an effect. There's obviously going to be a lot of hotel rooms coming on the market, so that will have an effect when these things have an up and down.
I think the one thing councils should never play in, and I believe this is politically too sensitive, I don't think the council should try, it's a bit like stocks and shares, the council shouldn't be trying to control one particular stock and not the other. If it's to be regulated, which I think is healthy and safe and good for everybody because it creates stability in the sense if you can predict what's going to happen. I think the regulations need to be about a level playing field. I think that's only fair and reasonable for everybody. I think they need to be driven by social needs that support the overall policy of growth within the community. So they, to me, it needs to support what things like Destination Queenstown can get behind, so the promotion that we're a safe, sensible place to be. At the moment, we already know that guests come to Queenstown, and part of our travel market is already leaving Queenstown, and the length of stay is reducing slightly. So we've worked for 14, 15 years to get the length of stay to typically around 3 days, four, way above the national average. We're actually in danger now already of seeing part of the market reduce, going from 3 down to 2 or even 1 and just using it as a stop-off because we're too expensive. That's good for the overall economy of New Zealand, spreads the money out, I'm in favour of that. My concern is any policy that specifically targets Queenstown has got to be a recipe for disaster on the backdrop of everything else that is already happening and going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years.
And just as one of the arguments Council put forward is that Queenstown isn't like the rest of New Zealand. So, as I understand, Airbnb is about 1% of corporate housing stock involved in Airbnb, whereas Queenstown is uniquely high.
I think Queenstown is uniquely high as holiday homes. Queenstown is uniquely high as the major destination for all tourism in Queenstown. So I think the council would be right to say we are unique. We're the go-to destination for the vast majority of tourists that come to New Zealand. I would consider us the jewel in the crown of New Zealand tourism. And any negative impact on Queenstown is likely to have a negative impact on New Zealand as a whole. So So I think there are exceptions. I don't think those exceptions necessarily mean Queenstown should have the right to impose different forms of taxation in order to self-control. What we will then have is a council that has political cycles, having taxation which they can increase. Taxation rarely ever decreases, and being used as and when the economy suits. I think the industry and individuals and community members are better served by a level playing field. As long as we understand what's going on and let us plan our lives, but council create a level playing field and protect the interests of all parties as best we can by some form of health and safety geared regulation. And I would apply everything I'm saying to the long-term rental section as well as the visitor accommodation sector, because the two are linked. Regardless, they are linked because they are investment properties, people looking for return on investment. So I think it's absolutely critical that the same health and safety rules that I've just indicated would be applied to any long-term rental property, because the concern I have as a local, having lived in them, is a two-bedroom property doesn't suit 6-7 people living in it. But that's what we have. We always have had that. So the concerns that you could apply to short-term rental are exactly the same for long-term. We can't regulate BMW without regulating Audi. But regulation can be simple, and simple registration.
Okay, thank you, that's very helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Howard.
Can we please run out of time, because I've got to get to the important I've got to speak.
We should have time
at the correct time, because I want to sum up.
Yeah,
our
time is
Mr. Gillies?
I should die on some 11:15, and I have to speak to anyone before.
Submission 60, which has been equally taken care of by the Section 42A report, which has left some of us a bit red-faced. It was a situation, I guess, it's not in your division anymore. So,
I think the unfortunate thing there is that Mr. Henson realised that when the council was through the VA,
that's right,
in December 2015, much of this submission disappeared along with it.
That's quite right, and unfortunately, the timing of it coming across my desk was past the fact.
Yes.
Despite that, I didn't diligently check that the Appendix 2 of the Section 42A report to find that it had been rejected. So, however, that's no longer in your hands, so we'll move straight to the submission that I made on behalf of Clark Fortune McDonald.
Yes.
And I guess that was one I was wanting to appear before you to answer any questions that you may have. And specifically, only to point out, and if you're reaching in your deliberations of looking towards the introduction of a reference to a subdivision code of practices as a silver bullet or a solution to anything you might be considering, then I would ask you to sort of refrain from that for the reasons set out in my evidence. And those are simply, I have taken and seem to be undertaking a few more of these applications where there is a non-compliance or a dispensation, if you like, required in relation to the subdivision code of practice, primarily being an engineering standard, and then it's addressed under a district plan, under resource management, and under an effects-based assessment, which, as you will note, as it's referenced in Chapter 29, is a restricted discretionary activity with four criteria, which are largely related to true core planning matters, whereas the engineering standards are not. So I'm informed of what engineering solution is as a planner by my engineers, and then I come to present the solution as part of a resource consent, which is quite odd, and then it's assessed quite odd, and often the decision is completely disjointed to the outcome. And I think that is problematic, and I noticed that in the Section 42A report it mentioned that there weren't many occurrences of it. I'd just like to confirm that whilst I would say yes, I've only processed four of these over the last 15 years, so that is extremely low, and and that's all bearable. But I seem to have three in front of me in the last year as the subject matter of the subversion code of practice grows from a 200-page document to some sort of 600-700-page document. Then we seem to be tripping up a lot more of these engineering matters. And again, particular reference to condition 3 of every subdivision consent that requires us to undertake a subdivision in accordance with the code, which we often find by the time we're effecting the subdivision, we have non-compliance, which requires us to address that in a roundabout way. And that brings me to the fold of having to entertain these applications. So again, if you're thinking of inserting it as a solution, I would ask you to at least consider my evidence and maybe my words today before you do that.
Well, I just want to get this clear, because yep. I understood from Ms. Jones that the matters that she was recommending be included were quite limited to tables in the code that related to access design.
Sure.
And the
yes,
so
the yes.
That another district plans are actually usually included in the district plan anyway.
No, and that's right. And I think it is somewhat odd having come from cutting my teeth in Auckland, where the transport chapter was pretty well exercised as in a consenting way. And
controlling chapter in most terms.
Yes, yes, but agreed. And it did strike me as being somewhat odd to have these tables and standards. They used to be under our NZS standard, 2014, with the same reference in the district plan, so nothing too much has changed there. But I guess even confinement, and yes, those are steps in the right direction to confine it to Table 3.2, and it's my understanding that Attachment F is actually specifications for irrigation systems. I didn't have quite have time to check that before I came, but
I haven't looked.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. So that one could probably go. And attachment or appendix E is the diagrams for the schedule, which is perfect. But again, there is standards in there relating to culvert size through reference to an NZTA specification. And if we have a slightly smaller culvert, I'll come to address that as a resource consent application, and I'll be looking at the efficiency of the surrounding transport network. I'll be looking at particular matters that are completely without reference to a smaller pipe size and a culvert, and I often find it's quite odd. It's entertaining, but it's odd.
I wonder if the other matter you raised is an administrative matter, where you say that condition 3 is you have to comply with the code. That's not actually in the district plan.
No, it's not. I raise it with you as an example of often where I've come to have experience in processing the application, which is largely in a planning process, but assessing an engineering matter, and that's where I'd like to think I have a pretty good working knowledge of the disjoint.
Are you aware of where Ms. Jones's recommendations have got to in the latest version, and that she's recommended deleting
reference
to section 3 and appendices C and F,
yes,
and only referring to table 3.2?
Yep.
And you're saying that's a step in the right direction?
Yes, I'm saying that's a step in the right direction, yes. And I'm not aware, unless there's any more in her rebuttal evidence, which I haven't read, I believe that the 42A was authored, the amendment provided a reference to a table only and some appendices, which I think is about right, and as best as we can do. But I guess all as I'm saying and appearing for you is if there are other submitters out there seeking other outcomes, and the panel's deliberating on it and they're thinking that that might be a reference back to the subdivision code of practice, then if you could be mindful of that.
Right.
For those
okay.
of us putting applications in.
Yeah. But in terms of where Ms. Jones has got to, that's...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, that's fine.
Yep. All right, thank you.
Mate, accepted.
Happy with that? Okay.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. I'll listen
again. Ms. Smith.
thank you for the opportunity to be heard. This is my first time at one of these hearings. So I'm Inga Smith. I'll be presenting to you two submissions in succession. So the first one I'm starting with, I'm presenting on behalf of Barbara Fons, who was originally Barbara Wilson, and that's the name of the property registered under her ownership. So just a bit of context, Barbara and I asked if she could Skype into the session, but we were told that the internet at this hotel was not good enough, and so that's why I'm presenting on her behalf. Otherwise, she would have liked to have Skyped in. Barbara and I have actually never met in person. We've spoken on the phone and exchanged emails with our first contact in connection with this district plan process. In that context, I've agreed to read Barbara's written statement, but it's unlikely that I'll be able to answer any specific questions that you may have for her. Barbara is happy to be contacted by email, by the commissioners, and by media in relation to her submission. So in that context, I'll read Barbara's submission. So Barbara Wilson's opposition to the Coherent Hotels development and visitor accommodation subzone extension request in Fernhill. Hello, my name is Barbara Fons Nee Wilson. I've owned 18 Richards Park Lane since 1980. I purchased it with the sole intent of creating a home for my retirement and a legacy in Queenstown for my family for generations to come. I recognised at the time that this was a very special piece of land with its unobstructed sweeping views and the peace and tranquility it gave me. It was also obvious to me that it was a unique location and that there are not many places in the world like this. I was young when I purchased this, and in order to pay for it, I had to work hard. Initially, I worked 5 days a week at Coronet Peak as a ski instructor, 6 nights a week in a local restaurant, and on the other 2 days, I worked at Down to Earth Health Foods. I lived a very frugal existence to pay for my dream. I've held on to my land for many years through times of financial hardship when I could have used the money from the sale of the property. Over the years, people have been continually interested in purchasing it. Now with plans to build a hotel to my property line, I feel my dreams have been shattered and the property will never be the same. It will be much less desirable to me or anyone else. My oppositions to the development are the construction process and all disturbances that go with it. Living next door to a hotel would result in constant noise from general hotel operations, a large continuous influx of people, trash removal, deliveries at all hours, traffic, heating and air conditioning, maintenance work, smells, hotel events, etc. Visually, it will not be appealing to have multiple rooms next door as opposed to a single dwelling house. It will also block the sun and views to the left. It's very important that I have significant space from development, and I am aware that the developers are trying to oppose the 4.5 metre setback. I have had two conversations with one of the developers, the first conversation indicating they would be interested in purchasing my property. In the second conversation, he stated they would not need my land, but they would get back in touch with me. All communication then stopped from their end. In summary, I will be more negatively impacted than any other property owner because my property is adjacent to this large, intrusive development. My property will experience a substantial devaluation, both financially and in beauty and desirability. This will put me in a hard spot, as the developer will most likely take advantage of the impact it has made to my property's value and will eventually make a lowball offer, knowing that I have few options. I know the odds are against me, as I am just one individual going up against a large, well-funded corporation that hires many experts to advance their projects. While I cannot produce volumes of expert reports, I think this development should not be allowed. Projects like this change the character and culture of an area forever, invariably in a negative way. For me personally, this project will have a very painful impact, both financially and emotionally. Thank you for your consideration of my submissions.
As there is no point in asking you questions, so.
Yeah, like I said, she is happy to take any if you wanted to email her, but I don't think there's probably much I can add to that.
Okay, we will go straight to you.
Okay, great.
I'm presuming that there's no house on the property at the moment.
No, there's not. No, it's empty land, and she has friends in Queenstown who regularly spray it for weeds and clear rubbish off it. So it's quite obvious when you go to the street which one is hers. Yeah. Okay, so my submission. So this is a verbal statement for the Stage 2 District Plan hearings by myself and Smith. My name is Inga Jane Smith. I'm a former resident of Richards Park Lane, Fernhill, Queenstown. I do not currently own any property in the region covered by the draft district plan. No legal entities associated with me or my family currently own property in the region covered by the draft district plan. My submission is made on my own behalf as someone who's concerned about what could happen to Fernhill and the wider Queenstown Lakes District in the future if a robust and sensible district plan is not in place, and I'm not an expert witness. So the submission outcome sort, my submission was brief, as I was supportive of the proposed district plan stage 2 map 34 Fernhill and Sunshine Bay for Richards Park Lane and the nearby streets. I sought to be heard to be able to provide context and location details to the hearing, and also in case any changes to map 34 were suggested by other submitters, which has turned out to be the case. My submission and outcome sought was as follows. For the stage 2 planning map, stage 2 map 34 is Fernhill and Sunshine Bay support. My submission is, as a former resident of Richards Park Lane, Fernhill, Queenstown, I strongly support the visitor accommodation subzone boundaries indicated in Stage 2 Map 34, Fernhill and Sunshine Bay with respect to Richards Park Lane. No properties with Richards Park Lane addresses lie within the proposed visitor accommodation subzone. This is consistent with the character of the street, which provides vital housing for families and young workers within easy walking and biking distance of town and close to a regular bus route. I seek the following. I strongly support the visitor accommodation subzone boundaries indicated on Stage 2 Map 34 Fernhill and Sunshine Bay with respect to Richards Park Lane, and seek confirmation of the boundaries in the final district plan. Any attempts to extend the visitor accommodation subzone into Richards Park Lane and nearby streets should be rejected. I've listed reasons to decline the extension of the visitor accommodation subzone sought by Coherent Hotels. To extend the zone sets a dangerous precedent for hotels to acquire cheaper residential properties, allow them to become run-down and unoccupied, and then apply for rezoning to get them zoned into visitor accommodation. Fernhill already has a large visitor accommodation subzone. The hotel, under both its previous and current owners, could have acquired properties that were already zoned for visitor accommodation, for example, those on Matakari Place and Manata Lane. Instead, they targeted cheaper houses and land in Richards Park Lane. They then neglected to maintain these to the same standards as other houses and land in the street. Extending the visitor accommodation subzone will clearly lead to a loss of housing supply if the visitor accommodation extension is granted, because Coherent Hotels states in their submission that they intend to develop the properties on Richards Park Lane and Aspen Grove as an extension to the Aspen Hotel. That's the written statement I've given you, and just following on from one of the previous submitters, so Mr. Howe mentioned Alpine Meadows, and originally I was going to put in a much broader submission on the visitor accommodation subzone. And when I looked at the map and realised that Alpine Meadows was not currently part of, or would be part of the proposed, I was very confused. And so that was why I really focused down on Richards Park Lane, because I was very confused by the history of the visitor accommodation subzone in Fernhill. Because my memory of that was originally it was Country Lodge, now Aspen Hotel, was that Alpine Meadows was developed alongside that, and I also thought that it would have been the visitor accommodation subzone, but it's not. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Just on that last point, your opposition isn't to the extension of the visitor accommodation zone to include the Alpine Meadows.
No,
it's really focused on
Richards Park Lane. Yes, so that was the submission was very narrow in its scope, and that's because when I looked at that visitor accommodation subzone, when I saw the draft, I thought that the proposal was to expand it out into Whitcombe Place and all these other places further down. And then I realised after talking to council that actually that was already in place and has been in place for a very long time. And as I indicated in my longer evidence, I didn't even know how to access the council files to see if I could look into the history of that. Mr. Howe's indicated if I had done that, it probably wouldn't have helped. It sounds like
complimentary submissions to us.
So this submission is purely around the Richards Park Lane and Aspen Grove things. And it was put in advance of so Coherent Hotels put in one, I guess, in parallel where they did, as I anticipated, ask for that to be extended. And there's more context of that in my written
And just to make sure I understand, there are three houses coming down Richards Park Lane from the current Aspen Hotel boundary. I understand there are four properties being asked. Coherent has asked for five
one in Aspen Grove.
Yeah, so that's a vacant section.
Number 16 is a vacant section.
And below that is number 18, which is
and
then the property you talked about previously is another vacant section in that same block.
That's right.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you for coming and talking to us.
The site doesn't be out a while ago. That sort of adds a lot more to it. It's quite helpful. Thank you very much.
Not from anything. It's just to say that you're not alone in trying to get through the council website.
It's a total burial.
But it's, and also, and and if I'm allowed to be frank, given a choice between a conspiracy theory and stupid interpretation of a computer, I'd give it a stupid interpretation every time. It's not a conspiracy theory to try and bury things. I've been a member of council for 5 years, and Captain Google's the best way to get through just about anything.
So I think, I mean, there was something in my prelogy evidence about the medium density zone, but I understand that's out of scope for these hearings, but that was just the context that neither, you know, Barbara Wilson plus myself were not aware that that was under consideration until it was too late to make a submission on that. So we've restricted this to the visitor accommodation system.
Thank you.
Good morning.
You're Mr. Donald.
Yes. Thank you for accommodating me.
I was going to hear you after this afternoon.
Before you, you've got a document I gave to Jim Bolt on Monday this week, who just attended a private gathering in Queenstown Hill to talk to some Airbnb hosts. I run a Facebook group with 141 hosts registered on it, and this summary was sort of presented to Jim as a sort of conclusion to many discussions we've been having within the group. Today, I really wanted to talk about what's bothering me as an owner. I'm 45 years old. I've lived here for about 8 years. I've got a property on Queenstown Hill, and I've been very busy with Airbnb over the last 2 or 3 years, and been quite aggressive with my own marketing of it. And I've it's been a financial windfall for me, and it's certainly allowed me to stay in town for longer than I originally thought. But I'm leaving the Airbnb platform because of some deep concerns I have with the tone and direction that council's taking with it. And the main issue for me is this concept of triple taxation, which I think you'll hear from other hosts about. And triple taxation basically says that me as a host, I get taxed on revenue by income tax, provisional tax, which I just paid last month, a few thousand dollars. I get a possible increase on my rates with this new proposal, and finally I get a reduced booking window, which is this three booking 28 day initial proposal by the council, since extended to 42 days. And for me as a homeowner, I will just leave town and I will just leave the house empty, because this direction we're heading with council is radically increasing my tax burden, and it's not going to be worth it for me. So I think 50% of the houses on Queenstown Hill are empty now, and with me gone it'll be 51%, and it will probably head in that direction, I would say. My recommendations for council are to just follow along from what New South Wales have just done and what Tasmania have just done. They're very open, very balanced, very fair. They basically say if you're present as an owner, you get 365 days a year unencumbered. If you're absent, you can be absent for about 180 days a year. And you've got to remember that New South Wales is a major feeder market for us. So we have, I personally as a host get a lot of people coming in from New South Wales, and I would hate to see what I could consider to be a very draconian environment spring up here for these overseas guests, because I think it reflects poorly on New Zealand. Finally, I'd just like to say that I think the concept of super host, of which I am one, I would suggest there's probably 100 super hosts in Queenstown, is this elephant in the room which no one at council or DQ have dealt with directly, and that is that we direct a lot of the traffic in the region to the various operators. So for example, last month I told a group, you know, don't get the bus to Milford, fly instead if you can, get the helicopter, and you'll find that you have half a day up your sleeve and you won't arrive back in Queenstown exhausted at 8:30 p.m. And so I'm actually a gatekeeper and directing a lot of where these people are actually spending the tourism dollar. And I think that some of the big operators in town just haven't understood this yet. And it's a, I think it, I'd love to see DQ or QDLC actually connect with owners in this way, because we are the highest rating Airbnb market in the world. We have a rating of 4.9 out of 5 stars. We're higher even in Australia. And I think the hosts have been exceptional at promoting not only the region, but an accommodation experience that is first class. When I hear of people's desire to regulate Airbnb in terms of internal measures, fire extinguishers and so on, I think it's laughable, because I think most owners have that in place already if they are responsible at all. Certainly I do. So that's kind of all I had to say today. If you have any questions, I'd love to hear them.
Just to make sure I've got the context for you right, your property on Queenstown Hill, which you own, do you use that as a holiday home from time to time?
No, I'm actually resident most of the year there myself, but I take occasional bookings for the whole house. For example, at Christmas time, New Year's, that tends to be extremely popular, and I like to get the top room rate, so I disappear
so
there.
So you disappear, yeah.
And they have the house, and of course, reviews are important too. If you have half a dozen reviews or 10 reviews on a whole house, that just gives people a bit of confidence that they know what they're going to get. So
you make the most of both living here and the opportunities available to not be in your house, but to get good room rates. But if you exit the Airbnb platform, as you might. You would just live there, or not
I will just come and go as I
come
please.
And go as yes.
I don't want this triple taxation hitting me over the head. To give you an example, I got a booking once for 30 days. It was one couple, 30 days, one booking. And if you look at the current council proposal of 42 days, that you've tapped out with one booking. And they're a British couple, and I don't even think they have a rental car, so their footprint is extremely light on town. My house could take 6. But it's just 2, and they're happy to pay the rate. And that's why I see what New South Wales has done is incredibly pleasing, I suppose.
So in that situation, you would, in terms of the choices that you've got as an owner, and if you're in the sort of New South Wales environment, you'd say, look, I'll go somewhere else in 30 days, and that's a really good opportunity for me to get good rates, and then do the same again at the summertime.
And a lot of owners do that. They disappear to travel certain times of the year when the house is booked out, and it makes sense.
With New South Wales, I mean, the example you gave was if the owner is absent, in other words, not like you, but if it's managed separately from you, from the person ever living there, 180 days a year. What's the rationale for that as opposed to 365 days a year?
I just think possibly they want owners who are present. But for example, myself, I actually manage it myself, even though I'm overseas, because all I've got to do is get the cleaners to come in and out. So from a management point of view, I don't require a third-party company or other people to come in and do that. New South Wales have been quite clever in that they've balanced the shit by putting in a three strikes you out rule, which sits in tandem with Airbnb, which means that if there's partying, noise or problems, if it's three strikes, you're out, you lose your Airbnb status for 5 years. So they've been quite tough on that respect, and it falls to the owner to control the guests, if that makes sense.
Well, they must have slightly wider controls than we have through the district plan.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so I love Queenstown, and I would love to see it prosper. I just hope that it does so in a balanced way.
Thank you.
There was just one thing I wasn't quite clear in the answer to my colleague. Under the model that was talked about in New South Wales, is there some kind of requirement that you have to live on? So if it's your property, you've got to spend a certain amount of time on it. Is that how it works?
No, I just think you've basically said we're not going to interfere. And basically, if you as the owner are stipulating that you are there full-time, 365 days a year, there's no council restrictions upon you. And I don't think they're policing that at all. I think you just stipulate that as the owner.
Okay, so they do have some kind of provision that purports to say you have to be there 365
days. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So you're free to come and go for a holiday, presumably, but you are saying I'm effectively on site for that period, yeah.
I'm interested in the New South Wales and Tassie example. Obviously, that has to be regulated if you're talking about three strikes and you're out.
Yep.
So it is regulated?
Well, I would think that there'll be a complaint made by neighbours about noise to possibly council or something, who would then talk to Airbnb about it, or there'd be a complaint made directly to Airbnb themselves. And Australia has had a history of problem parties and big block parties that have gone crazy, and I think
most of them in Queensland.
Yeah.
One of the other questions that there's a difference between, obviously you're an individual,
yeah,
and some stats. I noticed you got lots of stats in your submission that came from New York. In New York, what they found was that they ended up with around about 15 to 18% of the Airbnb owners being corporate.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
multiple listings.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were responsible for around about 30% of the income.
Right.
So it's a bit, I equate it almost in a simple fashion to the farmer being the custodian of the land. Big deal.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
I think what New York did was cave in partly to big hotels on one level, but I think that decision was probably the right one. I think it is concerning for Queenstown. I know Jim Bolt's personally very worried about this with Lake Hayes Estates and shot over country, that people have bought five houses, they're not present. People have a right to want to live there comfortably, they've got schools, they want community, and instead what they're getting is buses full of Chinese dumping Airbnb people into these properties. And so I think council have probably a duty of care there. What it's going to look like will be up partly to you guys.
So can you regulate, can you not regulate? We won't find it, we don't.
Well, yeah, it's something I have to think on, so I don't have a good answer for you today. Yeah.
And one of the last point for me is, you talked about the regulations being laughable because most of them already have them. If you already have them, so why is there an issue?
I see what you mean. Yes, that's right. But what happens is it's the thin end of the wedge. So you need a registration number, and now you need someone to check your house, and now you need it's a way for taxation purposes. I think that's what it's going to be used for.
Isn't that
yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Normally we would adjourn for 15 minutes now, but what we might do is just adjourn for 5 minutes and then we'll just get everyone after that. So I'll adjourn and